What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. We're back at it. We're getting close to the NFL draft, which for a lot of people is like Christmas Day for the NFL, especially if your team really stinks. Unlike mine, who went to the Super Bowl last year, I'm not as hyped up this year about it as I have been in years past. But regardless, the NFL draft is always a spectacle, and we're excited to get into a little bit of the prospects here. You know, talking about some of the running backs in the draft, the top 10 running backs. But before we do, I just want to shout us out. If you're following us, be sure to get us on Apple and Spotify. Drop us a rating. Leave us a comment. All that stuff goes such a long way in helping us continue to grow our platform here. We've taken some massive strides this year, and we want to continue growing, and we can't do it without all your support. Also, we're on social media, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, X at Tackles Pod. You're on Facebook only, like a lot of older people are these days. Between the Tackles, you'll still find our videos there. So again, be sure to check us out. Leave us a comment. We'll interact with you. We appreciate the support. And again, it goes such a long way in helping our podcast and platform grow. I'm back again with my good pal, Manish. Manish, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Burge. And just for the record, one of my closest friends, virtually every morning sends me a Facebook link of some sort. So Facebook is alive and well, especially if you're over 40 or close to it. So if you are on Facebook, you can catch us there.
It's funny because when I was in college, that was the whole thing was Facebook. And now I will go on it for the show, but I don't go on it for anything else. That's the only reason I'm on Facebook these days. But before we get into the prospects, we do want to just touch on, you know, the major story in the NFL. It seems like it's been around for a couple of weeks now. And that is the Mike Vrabel, Diana Rossini saga. It seems like we're learning more all the time, but the recent update is that Diana Rossini has resigned from her position at The Athletic a little bit ahead of her contract end date, which was June 30th, but she did resign effective immediately. You know, for me, obviously Patriots fan, so I've been keeping a close eye on this, you know, as it pertains to the head coach of the New England Patriots. For me, I try to avoid all the social media, you know, all the talk and the banter about it. Like I read it, but I don't read too much into it. But seeing the resignation letter and seeing how that all went down kind of opened my eyes a little bit. You know, somebody who was kind of like, well, I understand, like, Manish, your perspective from the journalistic side of view and the ethics behind it, the conflict of interest, you know, the topic of credibility that comes into question when these types of things are, you know, out in the open. But seeing that resignation letter, I was like, yeesh, maybe there might have been more going on here than maybe I wanted to believe.
Yeah, it was, defiant. It was very strong. And the question that, you know, I have asked myself, as others have asked as well, is why resign while there is a pending internal investigation if you indeed are ethical and have handled yourself with professionalism, as Diana Rossini said in her statement. It seems, and obviously I'm not privy to all the details of what actually happened, but it seems that if you take a preemptive move by tendering your resignation, you're essentially hoping that the investigation ends and nothing more comes to light, if there is something that could come to light. Now, what was interesting from my perspective was that The Athletic and The New York Times did in fact say that they will continue with their investigation for a number of reasons, not specific to Diana Rossini because she is not an employee of the company anymore, but just to kind of safeguard against something like this potentially happening in the future. We talked about not casting aspersions or making judgments about what may or may not happened. And I think there's a large portion of people who consume NFL news who are in the same boat as us. But however, you know, there are, you know, a large minority, I think, or a very loud, I should say, minority on social media, on Twitter X specifically, that has really come out and said a lot of hurtful and mean things. And I know people say, well, you know, you you lie in the bed that you make and things of that nature. But I just thought a lot of the stuff that came across my timeline was just exceedingly cruel. I think you do have to understand that there are real people involved here. Diana lost her job, voluntarily. She's likely not going to be retained regardless. She does have a family. Mike Vrabel obviously has a family as well. And I think what gets lost too often when somebody in the public goes through some sort of adversity is that these are actually people. I just thought a lot of people taking glee and joy. I would say 99.9% of those people have never met Mike Vrabel or Diana Rossini. And that's just, that has always rubbed me the wrong way about social media, Twitter specifically. Whether or not something happened, whether or not it was within your, moral bounds or not, the idea that somebody is going through this should not prompt joy from anybody, because at the end of the day, you wouldn't want people to, basically, dance on your grave, for lack of a better word, when you're going through some tough time. So I just thought that was really disappointing and really a significant reason why I've never been a fan of Twitter or X.
Well, it's the age that we live in, right? Like social media, the keyboard warriors, you read it everywhere you go. No matter what the topic is, if somebody has an opinion about something, social media gives them basically a blanket way to get whatever they want to say out there without consequence, right? Like a lot of people say stuff on social media that they'd never say to your face ever. You would never see anybody say that kind of hurtful or nasty or negative, however you want to look at it, to your face. And it just basically gives somebody to do that. And I too have seen a lot of that too. And I kind of just skim past it at this point because I'm going to form my own opinion about what happened. And I may be right. I may be wrong because again, you, me, anybody on X has no idea what actually happened. They don't. They have no facts. All they have is pictures and a resignation letter. That's it. And people are going to form their opinions. And it's an unfortunate, byproduct of the age that we live in. So it'll definitely be interesting to see if Diana Rossini gets picked up to work again. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. This is going to have to blow over before she even gets. In my opinion, I think she'll ever get a real shot again to do it. Obviously, people are going to question her credibility from now on, no matter who's taking in her content. But I wish, obviously, her the best. And, it's just kind of an unfortunate, situation that happened. But let's move on. Let's move on to some, the real NFL talk now. You get rid of the gossip. And let's start talking about the top 10 running backs in the NFL draft in 2026. Some big names, especially. We'll go right off the top. I'm going to start with the number one, the top running back here. It's going to be Jeremiah Love. I think it's the consensus number one running back in the draft. Going to be a top draft pick, depending on, which team's going to end up taking him. He did have visits with the Cardinals, the Titans, the Giants, and the Bengals. He's a beast. Me sitting with number one overall in my dynasty rookie draft, I've already penciled him right in as my draft pick, regardless of where he ends up, because, at the end of the day, probably one of the, if not the highest touted running back prospect to enter the league since Saquon Barkley came out. So, I'm banking on him getting that all pro day one, being the starter and kind of hitting the ground running, especially considering, this is, overall a more of a relatively weak draft class, in terms of comparing it to years previous.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you come in with the expectation from analysts and scouts that you're going to be like Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson, Christian McCaffrey. These are the best of the best when you talk about dual threat running backs in the NFL over the last decade or so. So it's a high bar for Jeremiah Love. I'm curious to see where he winds up because the talent is there. So I think ultimately you're going to see an exceptional player. But if he gets in the right spot, and when I say that, I mean supporting cast and coaching staff, he could be dynamic right off the jump. So that'll be fascinating. So, no brainer that he's the number one running back in this draft class. I think that's consensus. The number two, I think by and large, people would say it's his teammate from Notre Dame. That's Jadarian Price. And when you watch highlights of him, he is explosive. He jumps off the page. He looks like in any other year, he would be the number one running back of any particular draft class. And he also has a dual skill set. What I find fascinating about Jadarian Price is that there are very little concerns about his makeup. He has, as far as I know, had no visits, no top 30 visits for teams. And typically, that means you are a clean prospect off the field, no real concerns. And again, if you watched his tape, he's an exceptional player who I think can be an impact player right away. When I look at the possibility of having two Notre Dame running backs go in the first round, I think of two teams. And we'll get into this on a subsequent episode when we do our final mock draft. But I've always believed that the Seattle Seahawks would be a great option for him because Super Bowl MVP Kenneth Walker is no longer there. Zach Charbonnet, the other half of that 1-2 punch in Seattle, is coming off an injury late in the season. And I think John Schneider would love to have another offensive weapon. You know, for the longest time, people have connected that to be a wide receiver, but that's not necessarily the case. I think Jadarian Price could be a great fit for Seattle, but regardless of where he ends up, he is a special player who, if not for his teammate, Jeremiah Love, people will be talking about Jadarian Price being the first running back off the board.
It's always interesting to me when two guys from the same college end up being like top draft picks. You know, makes me think about, you know, years back with like, I think it was Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. Was it Georgia they played at, I believe? Yep. Yep. They both came out top draft picks. You know, the second one drafted ended up being a lot better than the first one, you know, with Sony Michel with the Patriots. But yeah, it's always fascinating to me that two guys from the same college program can be, you know, consensus like top, you know, at their position going into the draft. But let's move on to number three. This is a guy that kind of rose up at the combine this year. It's Mike Washington Jr. out of Arkansas. You know, he ran a 4.43340 at the combine, which took, I think, a lot of people by surprise. He kind of shot up a lot of lists after that occurred. And look, he's a big, fast, and physical runner. And, you know, 6'2", 223. So a lot of teams are going to be interested in having that type of back. You can never have too many of those guys in the NFL. He did have visits with the Falcons, the Bucks, the Packers, and the Seahawks. Not necessarily rated as high as the top two here on the list. He's probably looking more as a day two, day three, early day three pick out of the possibly third round, I think, is where we may have him if we were going to do a full, you know, seven-round mock draft. But the guy checks a lot of boxes. He's coming off a 1,000-yard season in his fifth year. I guess you could say if you were going to have a concern about him, he's had some fumbling issues in the past couple of seasons. But that's easily coached out. You know, if you're a player, that's a fundamental thing that any NFL team can coach out of a player. And when you're getting that kind of speed and that kind of size at that position, NFL teams are going to love to have this guy.
Yeah, size and speed, I think that's hard to teach, if not impossible
yeah.
to teach.
Yeah.
You can work on the speed. The size, I mean, you are what you are. Number four is a fascinating guy because I think entering the NFL scouting combine, some thought he was right behind the Notre Dame running backs. I don't think he falls that much, so that's why we have him at four, and that's Nebraska running back Emmett Johnson. I think ultimately he will be a top 100 pick, which would be in all likelihood at some point late in day two. He did not do well in the 40 at the combine. It's 4.56, very slow. It may have been the slowest among the running backs who ran at the combine. He did exceptionally better at his pro day. I think it was a 4.46, so essentially a second or so, or a tenth of a second, I should say, faster. For NFL draft Knicks who are really into this kind of stuff, they'll remember that Bucky Irving also had a slow combine time, and he obviously has shown that he can be a very good running back, starting caliber running back at the NFL level. Mitch Johnson's not a home run hitter. He does break tackles. There is a lot of fluidity to his game, nuance to his game. And I think the college production speaks for itself, over 1,800 scrimmage yards. I believe that was second in college football last year. He also had 15 touchdowns. So highly productive at the college level. But because of the less than stellar combine statistics, he did have a fair amount of teams bring him in for top 30 visits. Vikings, Jaguars, Commanders, Seahawks, and Ravens. Those teams are all looking for a running back, complimentary running back. So I think this is a guy in round three, if things go well for him, can really help your team out. But again, the performance at the Combine put him in the quote-unquote losers category, and I think that raised some questions for some teams. But ultimately, I think he's a productive player, and you don't have to draft him in round one or two, but he's a guy who can make a difference for you in some capacity right from the jump.
Kind of goes what we talked about when we were talking about the Combine, about how does the Combine translate to the NFL game, how these movers occur at the Combine every year. They don't always necessarily pan out. So him shaving that 10th of a second off of his 40 time at his pro day obviously is going to help him, as the draft approaches. But moving on to number five, we have Nicholas Singleton of Penn State. He had only one visit with the New York Jets, but he is a big play specialist for any team that's really looking for kind of that home run hitter option to add to their lineup. Wasn't overtly impressive in 2025, but in the past couple of years before that, did have 1,000-yard seasons at Penn State. So he's got a resume, even though he's coming off a down year, which can still translate to the NFL game. One thing that's wild to me, and I learned this when we were talking about our notes about this, is that he set Penn State all-purpose records. And, I think about one guy who played there at Penn State, that's Saquon Barkley, and it's like you set the all-purpose records, even having that underwhelming campaign during your career at Penn State, and you got a guy like that that you're kind of competing against there. To me, that's like, okay, this guy's got something at the college level. Let's see if we can translate it to the NFL level. I think he could be a big help for any of these teams. And, like you said, we talked when you were talking about Johnson, he's not going to be an early pick in the draft. But running backs, you can find them a dime a dozen anywhere in the draft, and they can come in and contribute to your NFL lineup.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because outside of the two Notre Dame running backs, you could rank the next 10 guys any number of ways. I don't think there's a clear delineation. If you talk to various draft experts, you're going to see a bunch of different top 10 lists. The order is never going to be the same because I think it really depends on what you're looking for. So when we look at who's number six on our list, and that's Washington running back Jonah Coleman, and two of the visits he made, I think it makes a lot of sense. The Vikings and the Broncos brought him in, and I think he'd be perfect for a Kevin O'Connell offense. I think he'd be ideal to help out in a Sean Payton offense. He's a three-down back, so he has a varied skill set. What's fascinating about him is that his yards per carry in each of the past three seasons, I should say, has dropped from 6.8 yards a carry to 4.9 yards a carry. However, in those three seasons, he had more touchdowns in each year. So he went from 5 to 10 to 15. So he was more productive finding the end zone, even though yards per carry dipped by almost 2 yards. But at the end of the day, 4.9 yards a carry last year is nothing to sneeze about. He had a minor ankle injury late in the season last year, but I don't think it's anything to worry about. I just think that when you're looking for a guy who can help in a number of ways, He's an ideal guy, and he's a guy you could conceivably get early on day three. So we're talking fourth round, somewhere in that neighborhood. I think that's a really good investment. If Sean Payton and Kevin O'Connell are interested in you, you must have something that is valuable, a trait, a quality mm-hmm. that makes sense at the running back position. Because those guys, more than most NFL coaches, there's specific things that they're looking for in the running back position. And if you have it, you can be extremely valuable for them in their offenses, regardless of where you were drafted, whether it's fourth round, maybe fifth round, sixth round. I don't think it really matters. The point is that Coleman has the ability to stick in the NFL for a long time because he does have qualities as a pass catcher in addition to running the ball that can make him useful at the next level. And I think ultimately that, you know, he will find a role. He's not going to be a dynamic player. I think he'll find a niche for a team, and you're going to hear his name over the next 5 to 7 years because he's going to be a part of some offense and contributing in a meaningful way.
Yeah. I mean, can I say the same thing about number 7 here on our list? And that was Catron Allen, also from Penn State, played with Singleton last year. He was clearly the preferred back to Singleton for Penn State last year, given, you know, the carry distribution as well as, you know, the yards per carry. So he had more carries and had a higher yards per carry, in 2025, which, you know, says a lot about what Penn State thought about this back. He's not a flashy runner, but he is known for his violent finishes. And that's like basically your true kind of like workhorse that's going to go in and grind out those types of yards for your team. And again, it's another type of back that these NFL teams, they all want. They want to have a bruising back that can go between the tackles, get the yards, and finish hard. And this guy, Allen, can do it. And I think you can get a bargain with him later in the draft to come in and kind of fill more of an RB2 type role for your team as kind of like a, I don't want to necessarily say a change of pace, but kind of like that second option for your offense. I think there's a lot of teams he could slot in and fit in. I mean, running back is always a position of need. It's a position that has a lot of turnover all the time. And Allen could slot right in to any of these NFL teams and help them moving forward and be a piece of value.
Yeah, and he played less, he had fewer touches, significantly fewer than Singleton at Penn State. But I agree with you, you know, with the right team, he can actually be important. Star quality, probably not. But he can definitely, you know, fill a role. And that's really what most of these guys that we're talking about are going to be at the next level.
Role players. Not,
right. And look, at number 8, we're going with another guy that Kevin O'Connell has been interested in the offseason. That's Wake Forest running back Demond Claiborne. 5'10", 195 pounds. Some people liken him to Kenneth Gainwell, and you saw what Kenneth Gainwell could do with a high-quality quarterback in Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh last year. He's got speed. He's got quickness. He can make plays in the open field. And again, this is a complementary player. This is not a workhorse running back, but a guy with a smart offensive coordinator can do some, you know, important things in your offense. You know, he fills a role. And again, these are day 3 guys, but these are also important because you don't have to invest premium picks in guys who can help you contribute. And Claiborne, to me, is a guy who would be terrific in Denver and Minnesota. And clearly Minnesota, as we've seen talking about these guys, Minnesota is looking for a running back to help fill a specific niche in Kevin O'Connell's offense.
And you talk about guys on day 3. We talk about they're dart throws, right? These teams take dart throws and hope that they can squeeze out whatever value they can take out of these guys. And the same could be said for our number 9 player here, and that's Kentucky's Seth McGowan. I didn't know this because I hadn't dove that deep into the combine, but he had the second best vertical jump at 42.5 inches for a running back, and his broad jump was top among this year's running back. Now, take that for what you will. I have my opinions about the NFL Combine. I know you do too as well. And the scouts kind of tend to agree that like those stats maybe don't necessarily matter as much when considering evaluating a prospect, as the scouts are not as high on McGowan as obviously others on this list. Has had some fumbling issues. He's not an explosive runner, but again, can fill a role for a team. I mean, the Chicago Bears, Minnesota Vikings could slot him in. And again, you have that one thing that Kevin O'Connell or Ben Johnson want in a running back, and they're going to squeeze it out of him and could carve himself out a nice role for an NFL team being a late round draft.
Yeah, and look, we're going to finish this list off. We could have gone in a number of ways, but I'm going to go with Clemson running back Adam Randall, the Patriots. And the Texans have shown interest this offseason. He's a converted wide receiver. Also the biggest running back when you look at pure size, 6'2", about 232. He does have a lot of power. Not incredible speed, but enough top end speed to make difference making plays in the open field. And again, this is like a third down back that you're talking about, and we're talking sixth round, seventh round, somewhere in that neighborhood. But again, a guy, if you're looking for a third down back, cheap investment, he makes a lot of sense. We could have gone in a number of directions. There are a pair of Indiana running backs that did not make our top 10 who could also be relatively relevant at some point early in their careers. That's Kalen Black and Roman Hemby, who's a very physical runner. There's also Oklahoma's Jaden Ott, who the Bengals have actually shown interest in this offseason. So I just think there's a big bucket when you're talking about 3 to 15, that dozen or so running backs. They're all going to get plucked up by some teams, and they're going to be used in specific ways. But we're going to round this top 10 list off with Adam Randall from Clemson, who, again, very intriguing player, converted wide receiver, who could, fill a role. If you had a smart offense coordinator, Josh McDaniels, smart offense coordinator.
I could see the next James White.
There you go. So that'll do it for our top 10 list of running back prospects in the 2026 NFL draft. Be sure, as Burge said at the outset, to listen to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating if you enjoy the product, the show. We are also on YouTube, Between the Tackles. Please subscribe, comment. We'd like to engage with our viewers as well. And all the other social platforms, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. And, of course, we have these video shorts, highlights. If you don't have time to listen to the entire podcast, this was a relatively quick one. But for the longer ones, if you want to get some of the highlights, we have key points, key topics that we touched on each episode that are available on all the social media platforms.
We will catch you next time on Between the Tackles. Looking forward to it. We're going to have our final mock draft for you coming in a few days. Look forward to giving it to you. See you next time.